You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk, the Literature Corner.
And with me is Andrea van Wyk. You will know this voice. Hello, Andrea.
Good morning, Eusebius.
And former news anchor, yeah. We've been colleagues on so many different platforms.
Yeah.
Here, on the other side, at Houghton, at Power. Where are you now, Anna? Popping up on ENCA.
Yes, so I'm working at ENCA right now as a sub-editor on the website, and I do book reviews for ENCA.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I've always known of your love of books. The last time we had long chats when I was still at Power and you were there, you were in fact also busy with a degree.
Yes, which unfortunately I still have not finished.
Don't worry, we're in the same WhatsApp group. Things to be completed, maybe. But I am so jealous because a lot of people try and keep up with my reading, but I also have other like friends with whom I try and keep up. But there's just not enough time in one life to read.
There isn't.
And that's part of the magic of bringing in people who do things differently. You read books and authors that I don't. And in that way, we can also just live vicariously through other people's reading choices. So I'm going to ask you to call in. It is the book review session. I've just made that up now. Maybe we'll make it a monthly thing. And tell us the last book that you've read or any book you've read this year that you'd like to review. Now, you can be generous. I think reading with generosity is a thing. And I want to do a show on how to read generously. I wanted to do it a few months ago with Bongani Madondo and Richard Pithouse. I'm still trying to get into those two divas' diaries in a coordinated way. But I also want to give you the freedom to slate a book if you want, although I'm going to be a coward because there's one book I read 10 pages of recently and I stopped because it was that bad, but I'm not going to mention it. So you can say whatever you want about the last book you read. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. But I'd asked Andrea specifically to come in and to do a couple of book reviews of what she's been up to. Where are we going to start?
Okay, so I want to start with a book that came out very recently in the last month or so. It's Karina Sturek, The Fifth Mrs. Brink. So this is going to be one of my books of the year in the non-fiction category. It's the memoir of the late André Brink's widow, Karina. Brink, of course, one of South Africa's most important novelists, recognized all over the world for his contribution to literature. So Karina Sturek wrote this memoir about her life before, during and after meeting Brink and their 10-year-long marriage. So he, of course, died in February 2015 on a plane back from Belgium after being given an honorary doctorate. He was quite ill at the time, so not really a surprise, but still, you know, obviously something like that is a shock. She describes how they met, addressing some of the controversies at the time, because she met him in her 20s. He was in his late 60s, so there's a four-decade age gap, and gossip at the time that she was a mail order bride because she's Polish, or maybe she's just trying to ride on his coattails because she's also a writer, and of course he's this really great author. But the moment you begin to read this book, you know that this is not the case, that Karina deeply loved André and that this was one of those great love stories that you usually find in fiction. She gives you her background. She was born in Poland. But when she was a young child, her family fled the communist regime. They spent a few years in refugee camps in Austria. They found asylum in the US, but they hated it there. And then after a few years, they went back to Austria and settled. This is the first time I've actually read anything by Karina Sturek. She's written some novels herself, but after reading this book, I am definitely going to make a plan to read some of her novels because her writing is beautiful and emotive, and it just draws you in. And obviously, it was hard for her to write this book, not just because of the subject matter. I actually interviewed her once before after the publication of the love letters between André Brink and Ingrid Jonker, which, by the way, is another exquisite read. The collection is called Flame in the Snow. And I remember she was quite nervous about a pre-recorded interview and reticent and shy. And in this book, she actually says, and I quote, "No one is better hiding among words than a writer." She says she's more comfortable naked than bearing her soul. But that is exactly wow, what she does in here. And she deftly intersperses these short diary entries of the days, weeks, and months after André's death with these poetic descriptions of her life with him. They're these these stark reminders of how strange death is to the loved ones of the deceased, how someone is there one moment and gone the next. She also gives you these lovely insights into André Brink, little idiosyncrasies, like the fact that whenever he went to a buffet dinner, he always ate dessert first. Dessert, then the main meal. Her love for André just sort of jumps off the page. I just want to read you this quote that she writes. "To experience life with André was to enter a space where the boundaries between the everyday and the extraordinary blurred, where duty merged with passion and a mere possibility became intoxicating reality." Now, of course, it doesn't mean everything was easy in their relationship. Both of them came with baggage. Obviously, Brink had four previous marriages. Karina also had an ex-husband and experienced a lot of heartbreak in her life. And Brink obviously had this thing attached to him, the brief but iconic and great love affair with the poet Ingrid Jonker. And Karina initially felt, you know, that she was kind of in the shadow of this person, but later came to understand and accept it to the point where she helped to compile the latest four, Flame and Snow. It's a very poetic book. She often quotes Wordsworth and literature like Hemingway. It's just this incredible exploration of loss and grief and a deep love that had me in tears by the end. It takes a lot for a book to make me cry. And I wept.
How awesome is that cover, eh?
It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. So, let me take a pic of it.
There's a contrast in the cover, like two photos, one in the front of her now, and then at the back, there's a picture of them taken on their wedding day. Just beautiful. She was wearing this red dress, and they're not even looking at the camera, but they just look so, you know, comfortable with each other and so, you know, beautiful. She just explores this with such skill, you know, talking about almost the ineffability of language to express grief. It's almost impossible to do it. But she, I don't know, I think this...
So there's a lot of poetic sense as an alternative way of making that come out.
Absolutely. And she just does it so, so, so well.
Stunning, stunning. 15 minutes after 11, book reviews. What's the last one you read? Tell us. And is it worth reading? The fifth, Mrs. Brink. Well, given that description, it sounds like it is a must read.
Absolutely.
Let's take a break.
702 and Cape Talk, the Literature Corner.
19 minutes after 11, we're doing the Literature Corner. I have a funny feeling we're going to extend it for a couple of minutes today. We're doing book reviews. So tell me the last book you read. You don't have to be as brilliant as André van Wyk is. She is a professional book reviewer, an incredible levels of literacy when it comes to the quality of reading.
I don't know about that.
No, you are. You totally are. You, Angelo... Same WhatsApp group, as we say these days. So I don't want to intimidate the listeners. You can just tell me, Eusebius, I read this book. It was sharp. Someone must get it. It can be that simple. I'm going to throw in one or two there as well. Have you read The Quarry by Damon Gilbert?
I have not. I've read one other book by him, and that's Arctic Summer.
Okay. Now, The Quarry is one of his earlier novels. I picked it up for 25 Rand. And it is about a small coastal town where a murder is committed. There's a witness. No one witnesses this particular act. And there's the most incredible, very simple story that happens. The pace of the novel is fairly slow. And it's one of those novels where it really turns on its observation about small town justice. You've got a church that is turned into a temporary circuit court when eventually there needs to be a trial that takes place. There's a circus that comes into town at some point in the narrative, and it just juxtaposes very awkwardly but interestingly with this description of one police cop that is the moral center of the book that tries to get to the bottom of the justice. And the priest... who is in charge of the church, and I'm not going to give it away because there's a kicker in the story. Well, not really. It's one of those stories where you, as the reader, know at the beginning what everyone else in the village doesn't know.
Yeah.
But the priest is a very interesting charlatan, and then you have the cop as the moral authority. And I want to contrast it with the book that you said I should read of Damon's, because I then Googled to see how this book landed when it first came out in 1995. And it's so funny how we bring things to our reading process, Andrea, because I thought one of the beautiful things about this book is that it is minimal in its use of language. It is not ostentatious, but not in a sort of like pretentious, oh, yeah. cool, I can be, Jane could see a light and also like use a very small register and get away with these thin descriptions of place and character. It was like poetry. It was that beautifully efficient in the use of language.
Yeah.
And then I come and I like that. And then I come across this review where one of the reviewers complained and said, this was too poetic. This was like a play. But I understood what he meant. We had the same experience of the novel, but what they regarded as a potential shortcoming of the form, thinking that this would have been better if it was written as a play. Yeah. I thought it was actually lovely to read a novel that had the qualities of the text of a very, very good play. So I highly recommend The Quarry.
Okay. Well, I mean, I highly recommend Arctic Summer, so you better get into that.
I'm definitely going to get into that. Khalida, good morning.
Hi, Eusebius. I just wanted to concur with, is it Andrea that's at the studio?
Yes, Andrea van Wyk. She's back.
Yes. The Fifth Mrs. Brink by Karina Sturek.
Have you read it as
absolute,
well?
Absolutely. I have. I've just finished it. And I have to recommend it to your listeners. It's really touched my soul. As Andrea says, it is written beautifully, poetic.
Mm.
What I really loved is that I'm a great Andre Brink fan.
Yeah.
And I loved the insights she gives in her memoir to him as a man, as a human being, all those little idiosyncrasies that came across in her writing. I would have loved to have been in the back seat of the Brink mobile just to see what the conversation was between them, because he sounds like a Hellraiser driver.
Yes.
And there's so much that the little details that she gives that I would never have known had she not decided to put this out there. And I think it's a very, it's a deeply personal memoir.
Mm.
There's admission in there that normal people don't make. The writing style is intimate. Mm. And one of the things she states in there is, I look okay.
Yeah,
but inside, I'm not.
Mm.
And that admission, it was something big for me.
Mm.
It just, as a reader,
yes.
I think what Karina mentioned at her last launch in Johannesburg was that we read because we want to see ourselves in books.
Yeah.
And that is actually what she has achieved in her writing.
Mm. Oh, wow, that sounds stunning. I'm definitely going to make sure that I buy that one. And where are we moving to next, Andrea? What other goodies do we have there?
Okay, so my next book, I don't know, I picked two books in succession or read two books in succession, both that kind of like tore me apart a little bit. This one is Stay With Me by Ayobami Adebayo. Ayobami Adebayo is a young Nigerian author. This is her first novel, and what a novel. The book is set mostly in the 1980s and 1990s in Nigeria against the background of the political turmoil with the military coup and failed elections in 1993. It's about a young married couple, Yejide and Akin, who are very much in love. But there's a shadow hanging over their relationship, and particularly over Yejide. She's, you know, after 5 years of marriage, she still hasn't had any children. And there's this enormous pressure from both her and Akin's families for her to get pregnant. And despite both of them having no health issues, Yejide just cannot fall pregnant. And even though she doesn't believe in any kind of sort of hocus pocus, she tries every bizarre remedy, sees every prophet, every wise man to try and fall pregnant to no avail. And then one day her husband's family ambushes them with another woman and pressures Akin into taking a second wife. Now, Yejide and Akin are quite westernized in the sense that when they started dating, Yejide told Akin she does not tolerate polygamy. And he was so in love with her, he agreed. And he doesn't want the second wife, but after so much pressure, he just sort of bows under it. He makes the second wife live in a flat far away from their home and never sleeps with her. But Yejide is just so hurt. She feels this betrayal and this intense jealousy. Now, Ayobami Adebayo really drew me into this world. And when I first read the summary of the book, I wasn't actually sure I'd enjoy it because, I don't want any children. I don't know anything about motherhood. I don't, but almost immediately I identified with the pressure and the judgment imposed on women who don't want children. There are always people who are horrified when I say I don't want children, and then they come with these awful questions and judgments. So I really identified with that. And it speaks to Adebayo's brilliance that I managed to identify with a character who desperately does want children. So the book kind of oscillates between Yejide's version of events and then Akin's version of events. And by doing that, Ayobami slowly reveals how certain secrets, hidden thoughts that these two characters have, that's destroying their relationship, how they are destroying each other by not speaking out about their fears. And it's about how we ruin relationships by being afraid of being honest, and about how we tell lies with the very best of intentions because we think it's helpful to the person we love, but about how toxic that actually is.
What about the quality of the writing style? Because I'm contrasting that with your review of The Fifth Mrs. Brink, and I'm thinking the themes that you are unpacking here, it's so interesting. There's a chapter in Pumla's book, for example, where she deals with those kinds of complicated relationships and how gendered they particularly are, and all of those kinds of pressures in terms of motherhood, but also her views when it comes to, for example, polygamous relationships. Are those insights delivered from an aesthetic point of view in a really beautiful, beautiful kind of way? Or is the moral argument really what drives the entire story?
No, it's written really beautifully, because if it was written, much more
anthropology light,
yes, then I probably wouldn't have been drawn into it because of the subject matter. I wouldn't have identified with it. Let me just use a part of the quote from the book. It is about all the mess of life and love that only shows up as you go along in life. And that to me actually sums it up. It is beautiful. It's not as, how can I say, as poetic or intensely poetic in that it quotes poems, etc., in the book, but it is really beautifully written, and it really is a stunning debut. I think this is really an author to watch.
Okay, dokie. We're going to extend this by 10 minutes. I hope that's okay, Andrea.
Absolutely.
Just for one or two more books. And then after that, we're going to talk law on the show. But we're doing book reviews for now. And tell me what it is that you have read. You can also review it at Eusebius. I see a couple of you are tweeting your reviews. That's cool. You can tag me at Eusebius at Radio 702 or at Cape Talk. And I am taking pictures, those of you who are asking, of some of these titles that Andrea have been sharing with us, for those of you who would like to get book recommendations. And I've got one or two more books that I'm going to give an opinion on, and I'll do so on the other side of news. But in the meantime, I want you to pick up the phone and tell me what it is that you recommend, or nah, if you think someone shouldn't read it. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk, the Literature Corner.
It is indeed, and Andrea van Wyk is here, and we're talking books. We're doing some book reviews. Now listen, obviously you've heard me having him on the show. He's going to come back for more specific chapters, because the chapters are each discrete in a way in terms of the subject that they carry. Democracy and Delusion, 10 Myths in South African Politics by Sizwe Mpofu Welch. But yeah, it's different talking about a book than when you're actually in conversation with an author, isn't it?
Yeah,
Andrea?
Absolutely.
So that's why I wanted to give my own description. Not a full review for now, just a brief description. Look, I think what's good about this book, it's one of those books that what you will get out of it depends on where you are at on the ideological spectrum. So if you self-identify as, I don't know, and I know these are imprecise terms, as very left-wing, then some of the arguments that Sizwe construct, you will think are trite and you will agree with. So for example, myth 5, Zuma's legal woes can be ignored. And he articulates why we cannot ignore Zuma's legal woes and what is at stake for the rule of law, and how that relates ultimately to the very conception of democracy that we're trying to entrench. And it's very cogent. It won't be news to you if you understand the place of the rule of law in society. But then there are chapters that may well challenge you. So I think different chapters will land differently depending on what you as the reader bring to the book. But what's good about the book is that there's so many books in the genre that are on the market in South Africa. The the moment, but most of them are comment. And there's a genuine difference between comment and analysis.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is genuine analysis because there's empirical work that he has done. He cites and cross-references and engages other thinkers in each of the 10 chapters. And so he's done the legwork before he gives his own opinion. He doesn't just do diary entries, which is what a lot of the comment-based current affairs book is. It's not. You're going to read this in a couple of hours, but deceptively so, because he writes so efficiently and clearly, which is the last thing I want to say about the book, is that his style is unsentimental. And because
is it academic?
Look, because he's very clever, he didn't take it personally when I said that, because he knows what I meant by that. Sizwe doesn't get overly excited. He doesn't speak like that.
Mm.
He doesn't rap like that. And he doesn't write like that. He says it once, clearly, and then he moves on to the next thought, confident that the first time it landed and it was understood. So you will read it, and that's not the same as dull.
Yeah.
But you will read it and you will see from a tone point of view, you just confront it with empirical evidence and with very cogent argument, and you don't have massive use of adjectives and adjectival phrases. It's not going to rile you up, even while it challenges you. So I highly recommend this particular book, and I'm looking forward to bringing in some young South Africans in particular to engage Sizwe in months ahead on very specific arguments that he has made. What is your next one?
So my next one is Autumn by Ali Smith. She's just made yesterday the Booker Prize shortlist for this year.
Wow.
It's the first book of a quartet. It's all going to be about season. So this is Autumn. Winter has just come out. I haven't read it yet, but I want to focus on this one. It, again, very poetic in the sense that it quotes poetry, very often, mostly Keats. It's a story that is compelling and full of joy at the same time. It's told from two perspectives. Elizabeth is the one character. She's in her early 30s, and Daniel Gluck, who is 100 years old. She goes to read to him at the old age home while he mostly sleeps while she reads, because, I mean, he is old. You discover throughout the book that they were good friends when she was a child. He was kind of this father figure who taught her a lot about life and art. Now, at the time, her mom was very concerned about this relationship, even as she called Daniel a queen. In her words, not mine. She still didn't like it, but it didn't matter. Elizabeth and Daniel stay friends. His love of art inspires her to become an art history lecturer for her doctorate, she decides to research a pop artist I have never heard of, the only female pop artist in the British movement who was completely ignored and dismissed, Pauline Boetti, who I initially thought was fictional because I'd never heard of her. But when I Googled her, I saw these incredible pop artworks that explore themes around the female body and so forth. She died really young. Most of her works gathered dust for decades in someone's attic, and Daniel Gluck knew her. So that's part of his story as well. Now, as the 32-year-old Elizabeth looks back on this friendship, Daniel has these surreal dreams looking back at his own life and possibly even an afterlife. It sits against the background of Brexit and the kind of hatred that Brexit has caused. It asks existential questions about who we are, but without pretentiousness.
Mm.
What does death mean? What is a life well lived? There are so many elements to this book, but they're woven together really beautifully without making it overly complicated. It's, if I can describe it, I would say it's a Keatsian, nostalgic, dreamlike elegy that contrasts the brightness of pop art with the passage of time and the absurdity of things like
that.
Brexit.
Sounds delicious. Read it again.
It is stunning. It's a Keatsian, nostalgic, dreamlike elegy that contrasts the brightness of pop art with the passage of time and the absurdity of things like Brexit. It's written in almost a sort of, some parts of it, like a stream of consciousness way, but not in an alienating way, not in a Henry James Ulysses type way. It's not obscure. It's very accessible, but really beautiful. You can take your time with it. You can devour it, especially if you love poetry, especially if you love Keats.
Beautiful stuff. Andrea, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. I had such a good time.